Hello, and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue: Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I am joined by my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And we have a very special episode where we have two guests that we are very excited to interview. We have Allison Evert and Savitha Subramanian, that both were co-authors of a recent publication called Incretin-Based Therapies and Lifestyle Interventions: The Evolving Role of the Registered Dietitian Nutritionist in Obesity Care. So this is a very hot topic. We're so excited to have them on. So I'm going to turn it to both of you. If you don't mind just introducing yourselves to our audience, give a little bit of background on your role in diabetes care.
So, Allison Evert, I'm a registered dietitian with 43 years of experience, 35 as being a diabetes educator. I worked with Dr. Subramanian for many years at a specialty endocrine practice at the University of Washington, and I also spent time in primary care, managing a team of dietitians and diabetes educators embedded in primary care. And most recently, I'm working as a diabetes and nutrition education consultant.
And I'm Savitha Subramanian. I am a professor of medicine in the Division of Metabolism, Endocrinology, and Nutrition at the University of Washington in Seattle. So I'm a practicing clinician. I'm a diabetologist and endocrinologist. My two big hats are diabetes and lipids. I also wear a big primary care hat, which is how I worked with Allison in the UW Medicine Clinic System in primary care. Helping primary care providers with diabetes management. I've been an endocrinologist for 20 years, and I take care of a lot of complex individuals with complex diabetes and lipid disorders. And thank you for having us both.
Awesome. We're so excited to have
Yes.
you. You've got such a wealth of experience. So obviously this is a really hot topic, but I'm curious what particularly inspired this paper, especially about the role of the dietitian nutritionist.
Well, I guess I'll just kick it off since I'm a dietitian and dietitians are in the title. So I guess Sabitha and I will go back and forth. But to quote our lead author on the paper, Linda Gigliotti, who's an obesity dietitian for many years, simply prescribing a medication is not comprehensive care. And I think the other thing that kind of inspired this paper is there's been a plethora of publications about the wonderful outcomes of these medications, weight loss, renal, cardiovascular, heart failure, the list goes on and on. But kind of lost in all of that is long-term management and the critical role of actually nutrition therapy in long-term management and the role of the registered dietitian. So, anyways.
Yeah, I love that. I think that that's so, this is the thing. We can use GLP-1s, right? We can use them in anybody almost. I mean, if you look at the indications and the number of indications we have right now, and the things that we haven't gotten indications for, but we know are coming, right? Last year it was with GLP, GIP, OSA, right? Now we've got a report on osteoporosis. Now we've got a report on, we feel like we should be in the water, right? And we do use it in people who don't see a registered dietitian because they refuse or whatever. But what we do find in my clinical practice is that if they do see the dietitian, their outcomes are like exponentially better and they stay on them longer. So, I think that's a big part of what I see in this. I think when we first started with Byetta and Bydureon way years ago, right? We didn't know what we know now about the drug class. And I think we were all misstepped there. And we all said, oh, maybe if you really want to see one, sure, but really they should.
Yeah, I totally agree. So speaking of that, can you I'm assuming one of the points of the article is probably the benefits of the dietitians, but can you summarize some of the key pearls about this publication?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the role of lifestyle intervention, like therapy. We know from systematic reviews and things that have and research that's been conducted that lifestyle interventions can assist with people losing 5 to 10% of their body weight. But when we then pair that, those key kind of helping equip patients with those skills and combine that with these incretin-based therapies that, you know, we can really hopefully maximize the impact long-term of these medications.
Yeah, great. And I think, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I think one of the important points of this publication is clinicians prescribe these medications. These are now become widely prescribed by internists, family docs, endocrinologists, maybe even the brave cardiologists, and the nephrologists are prescribing these medications. But keeping individuals who are prescribed these medications on this is a key aspect. And counseling is a big part of it for people to stay on this. And there's important key points that need to be the patient needs to be educated on. And so that's one of the biggest highlights of this paper, because there's tables which actually give you table 3, for example, if you pull in the paper, helps a person counsel, especially the registered dietitian, nutritionist, on what you need to educate your patient on to be successful in taking these medications, how to eat, what to avoid, and all those different tips. So that's a really important point, and I think that's another highlight of this publication, I think.
From the pharmaceutical trials with these drugs, that 10 to 30% when we dug into looking at what were the lifestyle interventions, were they included in these trials, we know that 10 to 30% of people in the trials stopped participating because of side effects. And that's when in clinical trials, you know, we're doing everything we can to keep these people on their medication. So what's happening in the real world? And I think one of you already mentioned that a lot of people are coming off. And when we look at the data about people that are discontinuing, 50% of people are discontinuing within the first year. And side effects are a big cause. So there, as Dr. Subramanian mentioned, like we have a table in there that talks about nausea, diarrhea, and constipation, and some tips that patients can have, can be given, perhaps even prior to starting the medications, you know, that maybe the provider could share with the patient, but also maybe proactively referring that patient to a registered dietitian to help them manage expectations and providing them with some, you know, skills that they can have while they are on these meds, but also to minimize the impact of some adverse effects of the medications.
Yeah, that's really great. I'm curious. So some of the other things we hear about are things like muscle wasting because people are losing so much weight so quickly. What recommendations do you have to address that? So the weight that's lost is ideally fat and someone's not losing too much weight too quickly.
Yeah, we know when people lose weight, and especially at the speed that people are losing weight, that it's normal in a weight reduction program to lose about maybe 15 to 25% of their lean body mass. And, you know, we really don't want that to happen. So we need to be guiding and coaching the patients about the importance of making sure they get protein in their diet. We talk about 0.8 grams per kilogram ideal body weight. But maybe we're thinking that with these meds that perhaps 1.2 to 1.5 grams per kilogram ideal body weight might be a place to start. Hoping patients can get up to 60 grams protein in a day at minimum, and hopefully spreading that out throughout the course of the day. One of the things that dietitians are hearing in the real world when they see patients maybe that are having side effects and things like that is they are actually losing their feelings of hunger and they're struggling to eat. And so dietitians who have historically counseled patients about calorie deficits and portion management and weighing themselves once a week and are now getting asked by patients who are on these medications, like, tell me what I should eat, you know, what quality, you know, food should I eat? Because I just don't feel hungry at all. And helping people kind of come up with a regular eating plan, a schedule of meals and stuff. And people are really kind of motivated to see that registered dietitian for this counsel because they have, you know, in many cases, patients are losing that desire to eat, that food noise that they were struggling with about wanting to eat goes away with these medications.
I love that concept of food noise. I think that in the United States, we have a lot of people. I mean, I think we all do it to some extent. There's food everywhere. I mean, I tell people all the time, there's food at gas stations in the United States, like full meals, right? But I think there is a lot of food noise. There's snacks everywhere we can go, come and get. And like, are you eating because you're hungry? Are you eating because you're stressed? Are you eating because you feel like it's time to eat? You know, are you eating because, tell me why you think you're eating and what are we doing with that messaging? I love that concept.
Yeah, I do too. I'm curious, how do you go about addressing nutrient deficiencies that may occur from someone not simply just not eating enough?
Yeah. So these are hard questions, Diana, because we don't really know. And as we were talking about, you know, some of these really potent agents, especially tirzepatide, completely shuts down the hunger. And I have patients now. Earlier this week, I saw a woman who was really concerned about just eating one meal a day compared to what she was doing. And this is just a medium sized meal and she's not eating anything else. And so she actually asked to be referred to a dietitian, which is appropriate, which is a flip from what we used to recommend, or as dietitians used to recommend, you know, calorie deficit, 300 to 500 calories lesser. So what about micronutrient deficiencies? We don't know, but, you know, it may be wise to assess for them if you have someone who's dropped a tremendous amount of weight in a short duration of time, assessing for the rapidity of weight loss. So maybe making sure their vitamin D levels are okay, maybe make sure that they take a multivitamin. That's the extent of what we know right now. I guess micronutrient deficiencies can happen, but I don't think we know enough. But it's a great question. It's all TBD.
Yeah. And getting back to your question, like about lean body mass, what we know from looking at the research too is that the different researchers are not really looking at, you know, what type of body, you know, like what is being lost, you know. And so, you know, kind of putting nutrition into this narrative, you know, we're hopefully to inform, you know, new research trials that are going on is like when people are losing lean body mass or losing weight, like what body compartment are they actually losing, and doing a better job at kind of consistently looking at that.
No, I think that's a great point. And I also think that, you know, even reordering the food where, you know, focus on vegetables and protein, focus on whole fruit, and then add carbohydrate if you're still, or, you know, more processed foods if you're still hungry even. Right? Because a lot of times they're not hungry by then. So then you've given them the most vitamins and minerals you can get into their bodies naturally, because there's a lot of people who just say, well, just take a multi-day vitamin. Well, we don't even know what's in those and we don't know how well they absorb. So if we can get as much nutrients through food, but if you're going to fill up because you're used to eating a big plate and you can't anymore, so you eat your favorite food first and now you've had your whatever carbohydrate, but you haven't eaten any of the nutrient dense food, you're still at the same problem, right? So we kind of have to think about this as lots of little things, how to control the side effects, how to motivate someone to continue the medication, how to eat smaller meals. There's a lot of little things that all add up to continuity of the drug, as well as the person not looking around going, we don't want super rapid weight loss. We want it to be slow and steady, or slower. You know, so when do you guys have any, when would you back someone down? Like, would you see, you know, can you answer? Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we do this all the time, right? And I think, Natalie, you're in clinical practice also. So I think so one of the commonest reasons we dose adjust is side effects. You know, some people, when they see the weight coming off, they want to keep ramping up the dose for whichever GLP-1 they use. But then at some point, the side effects hits really badly, especially GI adverse side effects, diarrhea, constipation, nausea is very severe. If you've counseled the patient, you know, how to take this medication and they're eating the right way, and then they hit this point where there's the intolerable GI side effects, I usually tell them to go down to the one dose down. If it's semaglutide, if there are two, I'll drop them down to one, or maybe even an intermediate dose to 1.5 when you go the click to like 54 or something. With tirzepatide, if and this happened the other day in clinic, I had a gentleman who was on 15 and had intractable diarrhea, and he travels for work. And so we had to back off. I said, you know, I don't think you need 15. So we actually decided to back down to 10 on the tirzepatide. The other reason I back off on the dose or give people a break is when they start complaining about, you know, a lot of heartburn and sulfur burps, it just means there's a lot of food still in the stomach, because that's how these meds work. They slow down your stomach and the digestion is slowed. And so eating appropriately is important. And sometimes, and that's where the dietitian and education on how to eat and the healthy foods that Natalie just mentioned is really the nutrient-rich food, rather than eating processed or, you know, even your, you know, a restaurant meal. It can take forever to digest when you're on these agents. And so if the sulfur burp is a really something, if they complain, then I will say you need to back off on the eating and maybe even consider a lower dose. I haven't really backed off the dose on for weight loss, where they've like rapidly lost a whole bunch of weight. But that could be because in clinical practice, I really ramp up the dose really slowly. And I don't go up to the highest dose. I usually just assess every few weeks. And I have a great team. I have a clinical pharmacist. I have a nurse practitioner. So we kind of tag team and make sure we see folks regularly. And I think counseling and monitoring is really key to prevent those adverse side effects.
And I was going to tag on to...
go ahead.
Kavitha, just to say that the registered dietitian often has a 60-minute appointment with patients for initial and 60 to 30-minute for follow-up. And one of the things that we can do is we do thorough nutrition assessments, and we can help build trust with that patient. And there's something about talking about your food that's near and dear to your core, kind of who you are as a person. And I think sometimes patients will share things with us that they might not share with their provider. Like, they are afraid to tell their provider that they're having side effects because they don't want the provider to take them off the medication because they want to lose weight. So I think, you know, that's the role with the luxury of time that we often have, but also the skill set that we possess in motivational interviewing and different types of counseling strategies, you know, to really engage with patients.
Yeah, that is fantastic. And I think Natalie and I have a very similar approach when it comes to ease of the dose. Like, we are not in a rush to get to the highest dose. We really want to make sure a person can tolerate it and does well with it and everything. So I'm curious about something you said earlier that is in your paper about the discontinuation rates just being so high in that first year. And so I'm curious, from your clinical practice, what are you seeing in people that stop it for whatever reason? But what a lot of people want to know, well, what happens to them?
I think there's a lot of factors. We don't know exactly what happens in these research trials, but we know that, you know, in research, we want patients to be in the study as much as they can. But I suspect a big part of discontinuation is the side effects. I mean, it's that's really common with these trials. But I in my practice, and I feel, and this is true of practice as a whole, not just mine, as also my colleagues. I think if you do this slow and you counsel the patient with your team, like with your dietitian, and you tell them how these meds work, Because there's so much information about these medications, which are not always correct. But I think spending, as a clinician, spending 5 minutes to explain how these meds work and why they do what they do and how you need to adjust your eating, which, again, is in this paper. It's actually table four, not table, figure four. There's no tables. It's all figures, apparently. But that gives you what to counsel and what to talk to people about. It gives you talking points. And as Alison mentioned, as clinicians, we don't have much time. But then, you know, say that, okay, we can, maybe you can come back for a teach on starting whichever agent. You know, it's a macro diet or it's appetite, you know, come and talk to our nutritionist and they can teach you. If you've never taken an injection, they can show you how to do it and educate you. And so I think that's a big part of success, which I suspect that these clinical trials didn't do. So I at least in the methods section of some of these large trials, I did not see such detailed information provided. So I think that these GLP-1 trials have a pretty high discontinuation rate, especially if that counseling is not done well.
Right. But, and I think some of it's the forced titration, right? Like this
is, exactly.
I know you, we as clinicians, we look at these trials and we say, oh, look at the body weight loss. Here we go, blah, 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 right? But ultimately, in these trials, there's forced titration. So unless they're going to, I mean, they're sick, we pretty much go up, right? So instead of where we look at as clinicians, we're looking at whether it's weight loss or whether it's diabetes with hopeful weight loss as the side effect, we will slow things down to give that person. So sometimes I'll say, I've got two more doses of this medicine and we can hold off. Your A1C has come into range and we'll decide when you want to go up. You're going to let me know. You might start feeling less side effects. You might, but I also want to mention out loud that lots of people have zero side effects. They have nothing. I mean, they're like a bizarre group of people who literally could go all the way up as quickly as possible. So I don't want our listeners to think every single person that starts on a GLP-1 or a GIP-GLP-1 has side effects, because the majority of people don't have side effects, right? So it's that clever balance between where do we make sure that they don't, that they're getting the side effect treatment if we need it, but also that nutrition, no matter what, is important, right? That vegetable and protein, that, you know, with some carbohydrates, that fruit is not a bad thing for you, that all of those kinds of things that a lot of people have never heard before. They say, I wore a sensor, fruit makes my blood sugar go up, I don't eat more fruit. But then they eat bread or mac and cheese, right? And it's like, well, blueberries are better for you than either one of those two categories if you had to compare apples to oranges right now. But I would really like you to have a blended diet of all the things you want. You know, so I think there's a lot to think about when we think about nutrition. And so if I can send someone to my registered dietitian and say, you have a lot to talk about, let me know how it goes, and give them the power to assess the person in front of them and talk to them about their food histories and where their eating comes from and where their motivation comes from, I think I see the best outcomes when I do that, when I'm starting a GLP-1.
Well, and I think, too, another point I wanted to make, I think Dr. Subramanian and I were kind of asked, because of our experience, to participate in this project in the diabetes world, because we've been using these meds for a long time with patients. You know, exenatide came out in 2006, right? And even though this is an obesity, you know, paper talking about use of obesity meds, the wealth of experience and that the diabetes education and endocrinology team can help inform practice for people that are just kind of getting into this class of medications. And one of the things that Dr. Subramanian and I did in our University of Washington medicine network was instituting medication adjustment protocols and competencies for pharmacists, dietitians, and care management nurses to help our primary care providers make medication adjustments, because most primary care providers, let's face it, don't see a patient again for 3 months if they've started somebody. So you can leverage team members with expertise to help keep your patient moving along on therapy and making adjustments, backing off when needed, having the nutrition team member help with side effects and things like that. So I think that's also included in this paper, helping non-physician ARNPs, PAs, working at the top of their scope with this new area of medicine.
That is awesome. So I am really fortunate, and I think Natalie is too. We work in large health systems where we work with a lot of registered dietitians. Are there enough for all the people that are prescribed these drugs? And if not, then I'm seeing you shake your head. So what do we do? What do we do for them?
Well, that's why we have papers like this, because if a pharmacist reads it, that is working with medications that, you know, obviously has expertise in this, but this can be like hopefully a tip sheet for them of high level things that they want to make sure that they include in that. But I don't know, Dr. Subramanian, do you have anything?
I do. I was just going to say, even if you don't, I think Natalie pointed out it's 11 pages long or something, but if you just go to the figures and go to figure 3, 4, and 5 and actually just review them. Figure 3 is, you know, how to prevent side effects. It's, you know, nausea, constipation, diarrhea, what helps, what you can counsel patients on. Figure 4 is how to, you know, educate them on nutrition and how to eat, like you mentioned, like healthy nutrient-rich foods. And figure 5 is just general principles on what to discuss with patients. So if there aren't enough nutrition registered dietitians, then pharmacists, ARNPs, PAs, and MD-DOs, everybody can look at this and you know, maybe cut out these pieces of these tables and have them ready for review and educating your patient. I'm not going to say don't read the paper, please do. But if you want a quick look at the a highlight would be to go straight to the figures and actually and the figure 1 is actually a list of all the GLP-1s. So it gives you all the doses and everything. So.
And there's figure 6, which is actually a whole list of resources that you can use, free patient education handouts, because sometimes it's just one thing for a patient to hear something, but we know that the, you know, different people learn differently. So having an education material that they can take home and tips for training tutorials, not pointing people to YouTube, but the actual pharmaceutical company training websites, you know, that are available for patient training and such. So
awesome. Well, I think this is a really well done paper. Kudos to you and to all of your authors. I think this is a great resource. And I do like how it's been split up into all the figures because it makes it easy to navigate and find the resources when you want to use them. So I want to thank you both so much for joining us. And for anyone that's listening, the name again of the publication that we've been talking about is called Incretin-Based Therapies and Lifestyle Interventions, The Evolving Role of Registered Dietitian Nutritionists in Obesity Care. And this was recently published in the Journal of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. And for anyone, if you go to the hcplive.com, if you watch the video of this, we'll make sure that link is there. Or if you're finding this on social media, we'll make sure you see that link so you can go ahead and click directly to that. So thank you again so much. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. And that wraps up this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives.